Good morning to everybody. Glad to see you. Glad that we can be together. We're going to study God's Word together. If you want, you can open up your Bibles to Psalm 78. I'm going to talk about Psalm 78 this morning. We do have some handouts for the sermon. If you didn't get a copy of the handout, Brother Sago is handing those out. I did print out not very many, but a few copies of Psalm 78, and Dan Kosick has those if you want a copy of that. I didn't hand out those earlier because it's handouts going right and left, and I just want to give you what you're used to. But if you want a copy of the psalm, just print it out on a couple sheets of paper, Dan has that. Really glad to see everybody, glad that we can be here together, and I want to take just one quick moment to, again, express thanks for all the teachers who are jumping up to help out with our teaching schedule. We got the new quarter started today, and that's just great. I'm excited about the new quarter of classes. And Heather worked on getting some thank you flowers. If you go out back to the left, all you teachers, you have a bouquet of flowers that you can take home, and just really want to share my appreciation for you and all the effort that you teachers are putting into the Bible classes. They're a really big deal. They're really important. Interesting, teaching Bible class is what Psalm 78 is actually all about, and that was not something that I was planning on. But the first eight verses, the introduction to this psalm, is really about the importance of teaching. And in particular, teaching the next generation so that the next generation can teach the next generation so that they can teach the next generation. Paul has a similar statement. I think it's in 2 Timothy. It's in one of the two Timothys, where he talks about make sure that you pass this on to faithful men so that they can pass this on to faithful men. And you can see how it just continues on. That's really what's amazing about God's kingdom and God's church, is that that's it right there. God gave us the word, and he told the people who got it to share it, and that's it. I think God's hand has been in it. I think he's absolutely helped me in my learning and in my ability to teach. I know that he's helped you in your learning and your ability to share with others, but for more than 2,000 years, this is how God's done this. He's told people this is the truth, and you need to share the truth, and that's about all the organization he needs. There's God, and then there's us. And I think that that's a really impressive thing, that God's word has so much weight and power in it. His kingdom can carry on with that simple idea of just continuing to share. Well, Psalm 78 is a lot about that. What I want to do is read all the way through Psalm 78. It's one of the longer ones. It's one of my favorite. I think one of the greatest psalms in the book of Psalms. But in the introduction, it talks about this uttering the words of a parable or a proverb. You guys started a proverb study. And the first eight verses, I'll do a little bit of this introduction, is about the importance of passing these things on, of taking this information and sharing it with the next person and sharing it with the next person. That's really what this is all about. Now, 9 through the end of the psalm is about what needed to be shared. And that's what we'll study as we read through this morning. But let's just read Psalm 78 now. Psalm 78, verse 1. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will utter my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wondrous works that he has done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded to our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and tell them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright, and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. The children of Ephraim, being armed and carrying bows, turned back in the day of battle. They kept not the covenant of God and refused to walk in his law. They forgot his doings and his wondrous works that he had showed them. Marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers, in the land of Egypt, in the land of Zoan. He clave the sea and caused them to pass through. He made the waters to stand up as a heap. In the daytime also he led them with a cloud, and all the night with the light of fire. He clave rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink abundantly as out of the depths. He brought streams also out of the rock and caused waters to run down like rivers. Yet went they on to still to sin against him, to rebel against the Most High in the desert. And they tempted God in their heart by asking meat for their lust. Yea, they spoke against God. They said, "Can God prepare a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock that waters gushed out and streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Will he provide flesh for his people?" Therefore, the Lord heard and was wroth. And a fire was kindled against Jacob, and anger also went out against Israel, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. Yet he commanded the skies above and opened the doors of heaven and rained down manna upon them to eat and gave them the corn of heaven. Man did eat the bread of the mighty, and he sent them meat to their full. He caused the east wind to blow in the heaven, and by his great power he guided the south wind and rained flesh also upon them as the dust and winged fowl as the sand of the seas. And he let it fall in the midst of the camp round about their habitations. So they did eat and were well filled, and he gave them that they lusted after. They were not estranged for their lust. Their meat was yet in their mouths when the anger of God went up against them and slew the fattest of them and smote down the young men of Israel. For all this, they sinned still and believed not in his wondrous works. Therefore, their days did he consume in vanity and their years in terror. And he slew them. When he slew them, they inquired after him. They returned and sought God early. They remembered that God was their rock, the Most High God of their Redeemer. But they flattered him with their mouth and lied unto him with their tongue. For their heart was not right with him, neither were they faithful in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his wrath. And he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passes away and comes not again. How oft did they rebel against him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert? And they turned again and tempted God and provoked the Holy One of Israel. They remembered not his hand, nor the day when he redeemed them from the adversary, how he set his signs in Egypt and his wonders in the field of Zoan. He turned their rivers into blood and their streams that they could not drink. He sent among them swarms of flies, which devoured them, and frogs, which destroyed them. He gave also their increase unto the caterpillar, and their labor unto the locust. He destroyed their vines with hail, and their sycamore trees with frost, and gave over their cattle also to the hail, and their flocks to hot thunderbolts. He cast upon them the fierceness of his anger, wrath, and indignation, and trouble, a band of angels of evil. He made a path for his anger, and spared not their soul from death, but gave their life over to the pestilence, and smote all the firstborn in Egypt, the chief of their strength, in the tents of Ham. But he led forth his own people like sheep, and guided them in the wilderness like a flock. He led them safely so that they feared not, but the sea overwhelmed their enemies. And he brought them to the border of his sanctuary, to this mountain which his right hand has purchased. He drove out the nations also before them and allotted them for an inheritance by line and made the tribes of Israel to dwell in their tents. Yet they tempted and rebelled against Most High God and kept not his testimonies. They turned back and dealt treacherously like their fathers. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow, for they provoked him to anger with their high places and moved him to jealousy with their graven images. When God heard this, he was wroth and greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent which he placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity and his glory into the adversary's hand. He gave his people over unto the sword, and was wroth with his inheritance. Fire devoured their young men, and their maidens had no marriage song. Their priests fell by the sword, and their widows made no lamentation. Then the Lord waked as one out of sleep, like a mighty man that shouts by reason of wine, and he smote his adversaries backward. He put them to a perpetual reproach. Moreover, he refused the tent of Joseph and chose not the tribe of Ephraim, but chose the tribe of Judah, the Mount Zion, which he loved. And he built his sanctuary like the heights, like the earth, which he has established forever. He chose David also, his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds, And from the following of the ewes that give suck, he brought him to feed Jacob his people and Israel his inheritance. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. What a great psalm. That's the, you know, there's Genesis and then Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's the next four books, right? That's what this psalm is. It's telling all those stories. And did you notice they're not even in order? They're all mixed up. I think that that's really curious. You could complain that Asaph, the psalmist, got them wrong. Or you can try to figure out, why did he tell these things out of order in that way? Why did he include some and not include some other events? I think that that's a really fun thing to do with the Psalms. We're just going to walk through and consider some of the lessons that he's teaching. But hearing it read aloud is such an important thing. He says in verse 1, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will utter my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old." That's just the phraseology. He's not, when he says dark sayings of old, he's not talking about the evil, secret, bad things. These are the mysterious things. They're in the dark. These are the parables or the proverbial sayings, the proverbs. These are the phrases. These are the things that teach. This is the stuff that grandma taught, mom taught you. He's going to repeat the things that came going, keep going and going and going. I call it the secret knowledge. But you have to put the word secret in quotation marks, because how many times has this psalm been printed? It's not that secret. That's one of the great things about the secrets of the Bible. They're not secret. They're in the Bible, and they're everywhere, and they're revealed, and they're shared, and that's what we are supposed to be doing. This secret knowledge about those people, those knuckleheads, those guys who messed it up so many times. Do not be like your parents. Don't be like your fathers. And when it says your fathers, it doesn't just mean your dad. It's talking like through the generations. Don't be like them. You need to be the child, however old you happen to be right now, you need to be the child that sets your hope in God and that you don't forget the works of God, but you keep his commandments. Verse 8 describes the mess. Don't be like the fathers, that stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. They were selfish. It was a selfish generation. Which generation was that? The generations that you read about in the Bible, right? We are all that selfish generation too. We know what that selfishness means. We need to not be selfish. They didn't set their heart aright. God gave them a way. God gave them law. And they were uninterested in that. They did not set their heart on that thing that was right. They did not set their heart on what is righteous. And we need to look for God's way. We need to look for God's law. They weren't steadfast in their spirit with God. Not only are they uninterested in the right way, but they're unwilling to do any aspect of that right way. They're completely faithless, and they're completely heartless. And it all comes from the fact that we are stubborn, or selfish, or maybe we're proud. And these are the problems that Israel faced, and that's why Asaph wrote us this psalm, so that he would teach it to his kid, and he would teach it to his kid, and he would teach it to his kid, because this is our perennial problem. What's amazing is that God doesn't have any problem with this, does he? Is God selfish? Is God vain? What about God's connection to the way that he should go? His heart is right in that way. Well, of course. God is completely faithful. And so as this psalm goes through, these three things kept showing up to me, especially the way that God had law or way and God had faithfulness. And they ignored the way, they ignored the law, and they were completely faithless. And God kept acting righteously the whole time. It talks about how they stepped up and they refused the task at hand. The children of Ephraim, being armed and carrying bows, turned back. Maybe we could use this to kind of date the time period here, but that's not really what's important to this. We have the people who have the job, and they don't do the job. They fail to do the hard work. Now, that's something that I can relate to, that I can sympathize with as someone who is lazy or someone who has messed up. I'm not saying that that's an okay thing, but I can recognize that is hard. I sometimes don't want to work. I sometimes don't want to do that thing. I need to work, but I can understand that idea, right? They turned back in the day of battle for shame. Verse 10, they kept not the covenant of God. They refused to walk in his law. I've rebelled. I've disobeyed God. And they forgot his doings. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. I think that's a really good thing to think about. That's going to show up a lot in this psalm. I think there are a lot of people who, well, we do this. If we want to do what's wrong, we just forget what's right and make what's wrong right in our mind. What is it that they forgot? Verses 12 through 16. He broke the sea in two. He led them with the cloud and with fire. He broke the rocks for water. Right? And we can go to these stories. He led the people of Israel. The people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. They walked through on dry ground. Then the Lord went before them by day in a cloud and by night in a pillar of fire. These great wonders and works. He broke the rocks and gave them drink out of it. It's mentioned two times here, and so we can mention the other time when it didn't go as well for Moses, but he breaks the rocks and he gives them water. These are the people who watched these things happen, who forgot that these things happen. And so now we have to kind of get in our mind, what does it mean to forget what you yourself have seen in the power of God? And we realize how much of a heart issue this is. God gave them a path, literally. He gave them a dry path to walk through. They walked through it that day because there was a scary thing behind them. But how did they walk as the days continued, right? God gave them guidance and nourishment. God's faithful to them. God's providing for them. He's giving them a law. Walk this way, right? I don't know if he had to say, don't, you know, maybe if there's a bunch of kids, right? Don't touch the water. Who knows? I think that God could keep the Red Sea high, but I can just imagine all the parents telling the kids, don't touch the water. But like that's the way God is interacting with these childish adults. He's giving them a way. He's giving them a walk. He's telling them what to do. He's providing. He's faithful to them. God does good wonders and good miracles, and they just forget him. I don't know what that means. Verse 17, yet they went on to sin. They went on still to sin against him, to rebel. They tempted him. They spoke against him. You can find these ideas in 17 and 18 in the first line of 19. They're asking for meat in their lust. They're not just saying, dear God, we're thirsty and there's no water here, or we're hungry and there's no food here. They're saying we're hungry and there's nothing to eat and we hate this worthless manna. And that's us, right? Oh, there's nothing to eat as we stare at the fridge at all the food that we don't want to eat. How selfish and pathetic that is, right? Selfishness was at the root of this. Selfishness. They sinned and they rebelled against his way and against his law because they did not like it. They did not want it. So then they tempted and they tested him. They start asking him for things. They question it. I mean, how do you respond when your parents have something to say to you? Or your boss, or your government. And there are things that they're going to say that you don't like. How do you respond? How are we supposed to respond? They also respond in doubt. See the questions that they ask in 19 and 20. Can God prepare a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock, and the waters gushed out, and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Will he provide meat? Just absolute selfishness in this doubt. We're going to have questions, and we're going to wonder about God. There's questions that how do you answer the question about how much Jesus cared? And that's okay. And there are going to be times when we doubt, and we wonder, and I don't know. That's not necessarily okay, like it's a good thing, but it's not necessarily a problem. This isn't the doubt. That's the doubt they might have suffered when they were slaves, and they're crying out to God, and Moses has not yet delivered them. Is he still out there? I can comprehend that doubt. They've walked through the Red Sea, and God gave them manna, and God gave them water, and now they're asking for hamburgers. Now this is not that kind of wonder doubt. This is scorn. I don't know if God's that good. Can he really do this that I want? Can he really comply with my definition of God? I know he did that cool thing, but can he do this? Because this is what I really want. My definition of God, my descriptions of God, my demands of God. Is God going to live up to the expectations that I have set for God myself? And that's really kind of dumb. A comedian expressed an idea about this, and it made me think of it. Imagine someone 200, 300, any amount of years ago, and they're flying a transatlantic flight, right? That's a miracle. I mean, it's not literally a miracle. But you are flying across the Atlantic Ocean, and the guy next to you is complaining about how bad the Wi-Fi is. And that's what these people are doing. God is right there, and they just want more. This doubting that kills. I think that they're doubting the goodness of God. So then he continues in verse 21. Therefore the Lord heard and was wroth, and fire kindled against Jacob, and anger also went out against Israel, because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. How does God feel? God has feelings, right? God is angry and he's full of wrath because they believed not and trusted not. This is where the doubt that they were suffering, the doubt that came from their scorn and their desires, corrupts them. What does it mean that they didn't believe in God? I mean, he's kind of literally floating right there, day and night. I mean, they knew he was there. What does it mean that they didn't believe him? They didn't believe in God's salvation. They walked through the Red Sea. Now, I can understand that now that you're in the wilderness and at Sinai, it might be a little confusing. Is this the salvation that I expected? You're still alive, and you still have forever food. But they're not believing in God. They don't trust his salvation. I understand that we're going to deal with some doubts. But if we start wondering, is God actually that good? Or heaven forbid, I don't even know if I'm truly saved. That's my problem. If I'm not sure if I'm truly saved, that has nothing to do with God. Because when God saves me, turns out he's really good at it. And if God saved me, I'm saved. I might walk away from God, but if I'm saved by God, I'm saved. And when we start questioning that, we're entering into this dangerous world that these people were living in themselves. So he's angry, right? We saw that in 21 and 22. He's furious, and he has this wrath. Verse 23, yet he commanded the skies above and opened the doors of heaven. He rained down manna upon them to eat and gave them the corn of heaven. Is that the way you react, right? When you're that angry, do you open up the doors of heaven and keep raining down food? God's unbelievable. Look at how faithful he is. He's given them the way. He's given them what they need. And they're doubting the way, and they're doubting his ability to give, and he, in his anger, still gives. How faithful am I to you, or to my wife, or to my children, when you're all bugging me? Right? And there's a pretty decent chance that the reason I'm annoyed at you is because I'm a problem. God wasn't the problem. God still gave them manna to eat, the bread of the mighty. He sent them meat to the full. He sends food. He sends the quail so that they can eat to the full. He gave them that they lusted after. That's a weird. Why would God give them what they're lusting? And then we realize in 29, 30, and 31, he gave them that they lusted after. They were not estranged from their lusts. Their meat was yet in their mouths when the anger of God went up against them and slew the fattest of them and smote down the young men. And we could read this story in Numbers 11. You shall not eat just one day or 2 days or 5 days or 10 days or 20 days, but a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you because you have rejected the Lord who's among you and has wept before him saying, why did we come out of Egypt? And it's going to come out of your noses. You're going to hate it so much. I think that that's a really interesting thought about who God is. He's angry, and he's still providing, and he's even providing what they want, and then he provides what they want, and it's in a way that they're going to die by it. And so they're overcome by their lusts, complaining to God. They're overcome by their lusts even when they receive their lusts, leaving God. Now, this is what Jesus is talking about. Man shall not live by bread alone. We're going to live. And yeah, you need to eat. Go eat a sandwich. But we're going to live by faith. And that's what this psalm is trying to communicate here. Look at verse 32. For all this, they sinned still and believed not in his wondrous works. Therefore, their days did he consume away, and their years in terror, and he slew them. Years in terror. So 32 and 33. He's still going after them. They're still sinning. Again, what does it mean that they believed not in his wondrous works? That's that question that keeps coming up. And I don't mean this to be rude. Are they just literally dumb? Are they just so feeble-minded that they can't remember what he does from one day to the other? Do they need to be held like a toddler? No, we don't go play on the highway. Let me hold your hand. Don't run out there. Is that what God needs to do? And so he takes them on a long 40-year walk through the wilderness, holding their hand like a toddler even. Now, that's the punishment, but you almost have this image of God doing that. Do they walk the way they're supposed to walk when God's holding their hand? Well, verse 34, when he slew them, then they inquired after him. They returned and sought God early. They remembered that God was their rock and the Most High their Redeemer. It looks like they are. But they flattered him with their mouth. They lied unto him with their tongue. And their heart was not right with him. Neither were they faithful in his covenant. Oh, apparently they're not. So they can hold God's hand and be forced to walk the way God says to walk. And they are kind of doing that, but they're also not really doing that. I think that this is a powerful image. There's so many times that I try to communicate to people, you can't make anyone be good. Jesus never did. We don't see stories of Jesus like forcing people. This is maybe the closest that we come to it. And the point is, even when God made them do it, they did not do it. Right? God keeps leading and they keep fighting. We really need to have full hearts. They did not set their heart right. Their heart was not right with him, neither were they faithful in his covenant, verse 37. And we need to fill our hearts with God, and we need to relinquish the world. We need to resign ourselves to the world. We need to let the world be dead. That's so hard. It's always been hard. We're not going to boast in anything except the cross of Christ. What else is there to boast in? We need to deny ourselves. There's nothing down here below that's worth holding on to. We have our loved ones and we have each other. But like honestly, my loved ones need to be connected with God on their own. And you need to be connected to God independent of me. And I want to be connected with you as you're connecting with God. And I really want you to be connected with me as I'm connected with God. It really gets down to each of us need to be connected with God. We need to give up all this stuff. That's just really hard. This psalm, I think, is helping us to realize how much we need to resign ourselves and give up this world. And God is so, so good, so nice. Their heart wasn't right with them in verse 37. Neither were they faithful in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity, destroyed them not. Yea, many a time he turned his anger away and did not stir up his wrath. He remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passes away and comes not again. How oft they rebel against him in the wilderness and grieve him in the desert, and they turned again and tempted God and provoked the Holy One of Israel. They remembered not his hand. God is so good. He is the perfect dad. And this is a psalm that I think expresses God as a father. Disciplining and providing. When God describes himself to Moses in Exodus 34, verses 6 and 7, we see that he is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love, forgiving, and by no means clearing the guilty. But he begins it by saying, the Lord, he is Yahweh, he is above. All of these thoughts or arguments mean absolutely nothing because it's the Lord. And he is so good to us. He remembers that we're just like meat hanging on bones. I mean, that's literally all we are. We got a spirit in us. We're breathing. We're just flesh. We're just a wind. And he sent his son to live that way so that he can sympathize even more. In the Old Testament, he knows that we are but flesh. In the New Testament, he becomes one of us and knows even that much more. But they didn't remember. They didn't remember that they were redeemed. How do you forget that? Peter was dealing with that problem too. How do you forget that you were saved from your sins? Well, if you go to church long enough, it can happen, can't it? I don't even know how long it takes. Does it take a year? Can you be lazy and self-righteous about it in less than a year? I think it can. Look at what God started doing in verse 43. All right, they remembered not his hand, verse 42, how he set his signs in Egypt, 44, returned the river to blood, swarms of flies, frogs, the caterpillar, the locust, hail, frost, the cattle and the hail, thunderbolts. I don't even know what the hot thunderbolts are even on. Are you impressed with the miracles of God? I don't know if the pic, this is frogs. Everything green in that picture, and it's hard to see. That's frogs, and they're like, oh my goodness, there's frogs everywhere. It's one of my favorite plagues. I also like the way that the line is here, talking about the frogs here. Are you impressed with the miracles and the wonders of God? Because these people weren't. And there's a decent chance that you might consider the miracles and the wonders of God what happens in the kids' classes. It absolutely does. It's because kids still love the wonders and the works of God. And as losery adults get over, or we mature past that. God forbid. What about the miracles of Jesus? Are you impressed with what Jesus did? This story is trying to get us excited and fired up about the great things that God did. He, verse 49, he cast upon them the fierceness of his anger, wrath, indignation, and trouble, a band of angels of evil, and he made a path for his anger. He spared not their soul from death and gave their life over to the pestilence. As I read through the psalm, and when I get into this section, I keep thinking he's talking about the Israelites again. But no, he's talking about these are the Egyptians. He smote all the firstborn of Egypt. Just the rhythm of this psalm, you keep getting back to God is punishing his people. But in this story, he's reminding his own people who need to get punished. I punish the people who are bad, and that is a deliverance for you. But it's so easy to realize God's doing this for his own people. God's doing this at me. He's going to deliver me up is the lesson that I need to be really letting sink into my mind. He made a path for his anger. A band of angels of evil. I don't know what that means in verse 49, and I'm fine with that. I'm fine with never knowing what a band of angels of evil means. What did God continue to do in verse 52? But he led forth his own people. He guided them. He led them. He brought them, and he allotted them their land. This is what he does for his own. This is what he does for you and me. He's burning up the evil, and he's providing this for us. 56. Yet they tempted and rebelled against Most High God, and kept not his testimonies, and turned back and dealt treacherously like their fathers. They were turned aside like a deceitful bow, for they provoked him to anger with their high places and moved him to jealousy with their graven images. When God heard this, he was wroth. And greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacles of Shiloh, the tent with which he placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity and his glory into the adversary's hand. He gave his people also over unto the sword, and was wroth with his inheritance. Fire devoured their young men and made the maidens have no marriage song. Their priests fell by the sword, and their widows made no lamentation. Then the Lord awakened as one out of sleep, like a mighty man that shouts by reason of wine, and he smote his adversaries backwards and put them to a perpetual reproach. Therefore, he refused the tent of Joseph and chose not the tribe of Ephraim, but chose the tribe of Judah, the Mount Zion, which he loved. And he built his sanctuary like the heights, like the earth which he has established forever. He chose David also his servant and took him from the sheepfold, from following the ewes that give suck, and he brought him to feed Jacob his people and Israel his inheritance. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. It feels like as this momentum is building, and now he's talking about us, right? You can imagine yourself as an Israelite. You've got your robes, you've got your sandals on, it's a Sabbath day, and you're hearing the word of God, and he's talking about us, and he's talking about how he did these things for us, he led us, but we tempted him, we turned back, and we've done all these things, and all of a sudden it feels present day. The forsaking the tabernacle of Shiloh, right? God forsook Shiloh, where his tabernacle was at, and he's letting his people fall, and he's not choosing Joseph and Ephraim, this great important tribe. Instead, he's choosing Judah and David. I don't know what the timeline is. Is this during the time of David? Or is this during the time when Ephraim of the north was so strong? And the psalmist is reminding us about that. But it's the house of David, David who himself has fallen. But all of a sudden, it feels present to us as if we were alive how many thousand years ago. But the other point is, man, this is present to us today. We're caught up in it, which is what I think we're supposed to do in this song. What did Israel do several thousand years ago? What have you done? Have you tempted God or rebelled or didn't do what he said? Did you turn away? Did you turn back? Did you upset God by what you've done, move him to jealousy and provoke him? I know I have. And God delivers us up to wrath. And he let his own Shiloh get destroyed, and let the tabernacle get taken. The Ark of the Covenant get taken away. They get it all back, and they build this great temple. That all get destroyed. Ark of the Covenant never comes back again. But they do build another temple, and that one gets destroyed. Do you see what God does with his people? That's what we need to be learning here. If you've got an evil, unbelieving heart in you, and you are falling away from the living God, this story is letting you realize God lets you fall away. You can see all of the verses of the stuff that he's been doing to hold on to us and how patient he's been. We must not fall away. But God wakes up. I like that image. This might fit with one of the lines from when Matt was talking about Bible as it's talked about in the Old Testament. He wakes up like a man who's drunk wine and yelling loud. This is an active, loud God who's here to save and redeem. And he sets up David, or the house of David. He set up Jesus. And we can see the hands that we're in here, right? Verse 72, is this talking about David? So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart? Or is this talking about God? Throughout the whole psalm, he fed them according to the integrity of his heart? Or is this a prophecy about Jesus, about how Jesus feeds us according to the integrity of his heart? This is a great line. This is where we are, and this is what we get to enjoy. Psalm 78 is awesome. And we really don't have the time to read it as the closing psalm. But you recognize that's what we need to do. The psalm is better than my sermon. I want to read the first 8 verses and a couple at the end. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wondrous works that he has done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and tell them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Verse 72, so he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. 72 describes the rest of the psalm. Doesn't talk about the judgment, but it's there. Verse 7, this is so that we will set our hope in God, that we will hold fast our confidence to the end. That's what the book of Hebrews is about, right? That we will not forget the works of God, hold fast our confession unto the end. Again, the book of Hebrews. That's what the book of Hebrews is about. The people who were neglecting and who were sliding back. Sisters and brothers, we cannot neglect to read and to know the stories that we might already know. But we've got to know them and read them and consider them and learn these lessons. And we have to do everything we can to share them with the next generation and our next door neighbor, everyone that we're around. Praise God for, I mean, it's a long psalm, but for summarizing the story of Exodus through Deuteronomy, it's pretty short. So praise God for that. My prayer is that we will find these parts in the Bible, that we will read them, we will take them to heart, and that we will think about them in our own lives and pass them on to everyone we can. May God bless us as we read his word. May God bless us as we try to teach his word. If there's anyone here who needs more teaching, needs help, needs prayers because you're suffering, why don't you come forward as we stand together and sing.